This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Bob Maurer. Bob's with Manduca Trading in Chicago. Bob joins us in just a moment. First off, our nation is in debt. Representative David Schweikert is from Arizona.
You see the number, $35 trillion. Guess when we hit it? We should be very, very excited and proud of ourselves. We did something that so many economists said we would never get to this quick. The United States gross debt will cross over $35 trillion. Now, understand, that's not the way Europeans calculate our debt, which they calculate our debt dramatically higher because of our obligated unfunded liabilities. $35 trillion. We did it. Congratulations.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Bob Maurer. Bob's with Manduca Trading in Chicago. Bob, it's been a wild ride for row crops already this month. From the WASDE report to the Pro Farmer Crop Tour, what are you watching?
I think the thing I'm looking for most in terms of the row crops is for some catalyst to come along to give a fairly decent confidence level that maybe a low could be in. We're going to get some bounces. There's going to be some catalysts that come along short term in terms of maybe a report or such that will give some kind of respite to this push to the downside that we've seen over the last few months for prices. But really, we'll see what needs to come along and keep a close eye out for some kind of build in terms of bullish confidence to see if this thing can, see if these markets can kind of grind to a bottom. Generally speaking, the context is there's ample supply. So to the point about the WASDE reports, we just zero in on the ending stocks number for the difference between the 24 and 25 corn ending stocks versus the 23-24 marketing year ending stocks. USDA expects a gain in corn of about 200 million bushels. And then for soybeans, a gain of about 215 million bushels. So just here in the United States, based on what's going to be left in the bins at the end of the marketing year, doing that math, there's quite a bit of a gain year on year, and I would say an ample amount so far in terms of expectations for the end of the next marketing year. Zooming out even more and looking at the world grain ending stocks scenario, if you look at corn versus last year, there, in terms of the USDA's expectations, a gain expected of about 1.7 million metric tons year on year, and for soybeans, a gain of about 22 million metric tons. So these are big numbers and ample supply. And I guess fortunately, things have been good in terms of the quantity of the crop and the quality of the crop and the yields that, on average, farmers are enjoying across the nation. I know there's still some spotty areas, but nonetheless, generally speaking, ample amounts out there, and that's a good thing. It would be nice to see prices also higher, but that's just not the case at the moment. Prices have reacted to these big numbers, and if those ending stocks don't get massaged lower, either through sales or such, then it's going to be a hard climb out of these lows. I mean, you'll get some moves, like I mentioned earlier, where it's going to come up a little bit, but you know, I don't know if it's going to be anything that sustains itself without some kind of sincere catalyst that it comes along. In terms of zooming in a little bit on each one of these, there has been some decent sales for soybeans. I mean, recently the USDA reported late, that 332,000 metric ton sale to China for the 24-25 marketing year, and then also reported 110,000 metric tons of soybeans sold to unknown for 24-25 marketing year. So to the point that we mention quite often, nothing cures low prices like low prices. If the U.S. prices and the quality is good get to a point where it's on the radar for international buyers, then business should happen, right? It's just math at the end of the day for the most part. And, you know, we're starting to see that, I think. So that could be a catalyst that we'll watch over the near term here to see if we get a sustained decent quantities of sales on a week-to-week basis for soybeans, all right? Corn is already is also in a value area in terms of its price on a worldwide scale too. So it'll be interesting to see if we can start continuing to have the sales in corn to also kind of eat away at that those big supply numbers that I mentioned in terms of the ending stocks. So we'll see how that all plays out. That's one thing. And then we're just going to basically be looking at the week-to-week weather, see if anything changes. I know where the pretty much the corn is, crop is made. I did a lot of driving last week. I was, you know, moving kids from here to there basically for college and such, and toward all the way from New Orleans up through five states to get back here in Illinois. And for the most part, things looked pretty darn good. And I would say, particularly when I got into Illinois, the corn and the soybeans for the most part look really, really good. So in terms of expectations for yields, you know, I can't see anything really changing it in terms of corn. As for soybeans, you know, maybe if anything happened to be planted late, there might be a bit of an issue, but August is that pivotal month, and so far it looks like the weather's been pretty conducive for soybeans also. So I think things look pretty good in terms of, you know, the probability of really good yields here, especially in the three I's, right? And you mentioned the DTN report that came out last recently, the yield tour, the digital yield tour, and it basically showed really good expectations for yields in terms of the three I's, right? Iowa, Illinois, Indiana. So if those three states do well, typically that's going to definitely help out in terms of the production. So we'll see if that continues to play out. We also have the Pro Farmer Tour, so we'll see if anything interesting comes from that. It started today, goes through Thursday, and they'll be working both ends of the Corn Belt, the Western and the Eastern Corn Belt, simultaneously, and then we'll get their summary come Friday. I would say that whatever they say at the end of the week, the tendency for their accuracy is tended to be a little bit shy. So I think it's like 9 out of the 12 years I read, 9 out of the last 12 years, their yields in terms of corn and soybean expectations has been shy of what they actually ended up being. So probably less so comparing their numbers to the USDA would be a wise thing, and probably more so just comparing their year to year. So whatever model they use, whatever method they use, if you see some kind of data, if you see data that comes out from their results, compare themselves with themselves. I wouldn't necessarily compare them with the USDA yields because, as I mentioned, it hasn't been necessarily predominantly accurate. So we'll see how that plays out. Beyond that, generally speaking, for the month of August, if you look at the tendencies, which I like to do, if you look at December corn, pretty much August tends to be a more sideways at the lows type of month. There's about a 50-50 probability from now until the end of the month for it to go higher or lower. So flip a coin, we'll see what happens there. Soybeans actually tends to move higher around about mid-month August into the end of August. So we'll see how that plays out. That's just tendencies. This could be an off year when those you can just kind of throw them into the garbage, but that's the way things happen in the marketplace. But generally speaking, over the long haul, that's the tendency, is for it to move higher, soybeans to move higher into the November contract for the tail end of the month. And then for wheat, steady to lower would be the tendency for the Chicago wheat, that is. So we'll see how that all plays out. And just to kind of finish the thought with the other major market that we cover, cotton futures tend to also have a bit of a rally going into the tail end of August. So we'll see how that plays out. So again, those are potential markets that can move higher, right? I said soybeans and cotton. But don't forget, we're looking at some pretty big numbers in terms of the ending stocks and such with both of those. So I'm not necessarily thinking they may be ready to turn bullish, but I would say that maybe it might set up for some to be maybe a selling opportunity. We'll just see how it all plays out. So I would say that's basically the summary, the bigger picture of what's going on in the grains, kind of what I'm looking for. I'm just waiting for the catalyst. I don't know. There's a bunch of things that could happen, and I've been in these markets long enough to know that some things happen out of the blue, and all of a sudden your expectations, and you would say that the market's consensus is for the downside for these grains, but anything's can, you know, something can come along out of the blue and turn it around quickly. So we'll be ready to adapt if that happens.
So we also get another monthly cattle on feed report from USDA on Friday. Any expectations?
Well, there's been some surprises this year in terms of expectations for the cattle on feed report, so I'd hate to hazard a guess because I guess the ultimate decision maker is going to be how the market reacts to whatever numbers the USDA publishes for the cattle on feed as opposed to what the expectations are. So we'll just see how it plays out in terms of that. What I would say is it kind of feels like the cattle market's in a bit of shock. I mean, if you look at what's happened over the last couple of weeks, the market for the December live cattle futures, for example, was sitting between about 184 to say 190. So a pretty solid $6 range or so over the last couple few months. And then all of a sudden we had that huge push to the downside in the global markets in terms of the equity markets. And that just knocked the bullish psyche right out of the live cattle market, right? I guess the argument is typical, which is it's a wealth effect. If you see the equity market breaking hard, then there's going to be a potential impact on the consumer because they might tighten up in terms of the pocketbook. So we broke from the 184 to 190 trading range to where we are now in the 176 to 182. So both are $6 ranges, but this one's obviously 12 bucks lower than the previous high, at least the high end of the range. So if you're following me there, basically a big push to the downside. The market's not just trying to shake it off and see what's going to happen next, right? In terms of packer profitability, I know they've been trying to massage the price lower. Now we've gotten the price lower, so we'll see what happens in terms of the leverage they might have going forward, in terms of the way they can manage their throughput and have an impact on price. We'll see how that plays out. And then in terms of the cash, for example, it is kind of working in their favor. Cash trade was 2 to 4 bucks lower in the north last week, a buck or two lower in the south. The northern dressed cattle were sitting around 298, southern live about 185, and then box beef prices actually closed up just a bit higher, like a half a buck or so, so no big deal there. And cash is called steady this week, so we'll see how that works its way into.
All right, let's do contact information.
Sure, contact information. You can pick up the phone, give me a call. Number is 312-987-2053. Or come visit us online at www.myfuturesadvisor.com or shoot me an email if you want to discuss anything about the markets. And that email address is bmaurer, that's B-M-A-U-R-E-R, at manducatrading.com.
Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading, Chicago, on the Agribusiness Report.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
In this heat, you're concerned about both the health of your animals and their performance. Strobel Super Shades can reduce the dangerous ground temperatures 30 degrees or more. Strobel Super Shades, the best-built cattle shades in the industry, available in 40 by 40 with 1,600 square feet of shade or 20 by 20, proven to protect your cattle and increase your gains. Go to StrobelShades.com for more. Strobel Shades.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading in Chicago.
Attention, High Plains landowners. The Sandhill Area Research Association is looking for 50 playa lakes in need of restoration. This project brings free resources to you and includes a per-acre incentive. Playas matter today for our ecosystem and for tomorrow's water supply. To learn more, visit playasworkfortexans.com. Together, we can leave a legacy of water for future generations.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, special guest Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading Chicago, online, myfuturesadvisor.com.
Truck owners, want to turn your truck into the ultimate workhorse or off-road beast? The possibilities are endless in making your truck more versatile, more fun, and higher performing. When it comes to equipping your truck, there's only one name you need to know. Rascal Supply. North Highway 87 between 98th and 114th Streets in Lubbock, or call 806-300-8007. For all your truck accessories, Rascal takes your truck to the next level.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
An increase in our country's corn production was not enough to offset global production numbers, with USDA noting a 5 million ton decrease in world corn production forecast from July.
And that would be down 4 million tons year over year. And those reductions reflect several different countries, including the European Union, where we reduced production by 3.5 million metric tons. That's mainly reflecting heat and dryness in Southeast Europe and into Serbia and then into Ukraine. In parts of Russia, so that Black Sea region as well.
World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Mark Jekinowski says the lower global corn production will benefit U.S. corn on the global export market.
We raised our corn export forecast by 75 million bushels. That just reflects lower levels of competing exports. U.S. prices are competitive and demand remains strong.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.